Welcome to Pineland Underground, the premier podcast from the U.S. Army John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School and the Special Operations Center of Excellence here at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Here, we explore critical topics to form a more holistic understanding of special warfare and the role of Army Special Operations in the future of our national defense. I'm your host, Major Bobby Tuttle, and this is Pineland Underground. Disclaimer here, the views and opinions you hear today are those of the experts being interviewed and do not necessarily reflect the official policy of the Department of Defense, the U.S. Army, or the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School. It's my pleasure today to introduce today's guest, Major Stu Gallagher. He is the G-35 Director of Plans and Analysis for the Special Warfare Center and School. And more importantly, he's responsible for the creation and development of one of SWCC's most important current initiatives, the Special Operations Force Management Information System, or SOFMIS. A little bit of background on Stu. After graduating from Marist College with a degree in Russian Area Studies, Stu worked in the international business world for 5 years in jobs spanning from Seattle, Washington to Dallas, Texas, and from Moscow to St. Petersburg, Russia. In 1998, Major Gallagher enlisted in the Army, serving as a Russian linguist, cryptologist, and the Military Intelligence Corps. In 2001, he attended OCS, or Officer Candidate School, commissioning as a transportation officer with his first posting here at John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School. Stu served a multitude of special operations logistics positions. After separating from the military in 2005, he conducted a brief stint in the reserves and then returned to active duty as a psychological operations officer. He has multiple deployments with experience in Iraq, Afghanistan, Qatar, Poland, Ukraine, and Germany. And prior to arriving at SWCC last summer, Stu served as a senior PSYOP observer coach trainer at the Joint Multinational Readiness Center, or JMRC, in Hohenfels, Germany. Today's episode is focused on Major Gallagher's work here since arriving at the Special Warfare Center and School. Specifically, SOFMIS, or the Special Operations Force Management Information System. Good or bad, all organizations have a management information system. And about a year ago, SWCC embarked on a major initiative to improve how it collects, manages, and then analyzes information. And the result of this was SOFMIS. With that, Major Stu Gallagher, thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks for having me.
So, Stu, before we get started into SOFMIS and kind of do a deep dive, tell me a little bit more about yourself and what led you here to the Special Warfare Center and School.
Well, I guess what led me here, I was sitting in Germany and looking at my next assignment, and they decided I needed to be on a G staff, and so they put me at Special Warfare Center. I was working, like you said, over in Hohenfels as an observer coach trainer, which is a great job for any of those that haven't been in that position. And I got orders to come here at the Special Warfare Center, and I guess we could talk a little bit about that and as we move through, but they put me in the G-35 position, which at the time did not exist, so that was something we stood up when I got here.
So how did you approach that as a special operations individual coming into the Special Warfare Center and School? How did you really approach that new task to serve as the plans and analysis or G-35 director?
I have a fair amount of experience in plans from both the business world and working in the military, so the plans aspect of it wasn't too difficult. This is my third time at SWCC, so I think a key piece of moving in any organization is actually understanding the organization itself. So I did kind of have a leg up in that regard. I guess where I didn't was I'd never worked on a G staff before.
Okay.
So it's the first time I've ever stepped into that role. And then, of course, I stepped into a role that didn't exist before. The 3-5 shop had not been in place in the past. My boss, who's the G3, he decided that we were lacking in that area. We needed to stand up a G-35 element within the G-3 itself. So that's how it really started as far as the position.
Yeah. So I think a little bit of your background in the business world will apply and have some good context to how you initiated SOFMIS. But before we deep dive that, what was kind of your background in the business world? What kind of experience do you have that's helped you lead you to success here at SWCC?
I guess the business world, when I got done with college, I moved out to Seattle and started working at a freight forwarding company that did business with the former Soviet Union. And for anybody that was around during that time, it was the fall of the Soviet Union happened in 91. I graduated in 93. I had just come off a study abroad program over in Ukraine and was looking to continue to work in that arena. They happened to start working with the former Soviet Union, mainly out in Sakhalin Island, which is the Russian Far East. And so it was a good opportunity to kind of start working in international business and start working with the former Soviet Union itself. After doing that about a year, I ended up standing up my own company for Russian translation and consultation. And that particular stand-up of that company ended up leading to contracts in the former Soviet Union. So
oh, wow.
From there, I ended up moving to St. Petersburg, Russia, and ran an operation over in St. Petersburg, Russia, doing freight logistics throughout the former Soviet Union, Mongolia, and China. So that was a great opportunity. So I did that for quite a few years, then came back to the States, took on another contract training the executive staff for a company on operations within Russia, and then later on moved on to enlisting in the Army as a Russian linguist cryptologist. So
holy smokes. So no wonder your path led you to special operations. With that kind of background, there's immense value that you bring to the table with real-world experience, business, international experience, relations, and then cultural and background experience that, you know, ties into what we do overseas with our partners. That's fascinating, man.
Yeah, it was kind of a good fit. I knew joining the military, eventually I wanted to gravitate towards special operations. Took me a few years because I came in, like I said, in the military intelligence corps, and they don't let go of their people very easily. So it really didn't happen until I became an officer and decided to assess for PSYOP. So.
Nah, very impressive. Very cool. So tell me a little bit about SOFMIS. You essentially were given a project, or you kind of stepped into the G35 position, tried to figure out where you fit in, what your role is, and then tried to figure out how to better operationalize and efficient, make our Special Warfare Center pipeline and pathway more efficient. But kind of tell me about SOFMIS. What is it, and how did it initiate?
SOFMIS is, I guess, to give you a quick overview on it, it's really the umbrella program for all information-related activities that we do here at the center. So when I started digging into this, it took me a few months to really figure out what the problem was. And it came down to, you know, a management information system. And when you look at management information system, the definition of a management information system, it's constituted of information management systems. So subsystems under that system that constitute the bigger system. We had one in place. Unfortunately, a lot of it was antiquated and inefficient in a lot of ways. Like a lot of government organizations, we had stovepiped a lot of our functionality.
Okay.
And it made it very difficult sometimes to share information across the enterprise.
So many times we see things where a program will be put in place by whether one unit or one entity, or possibly even, you know, one service branch, and then they don't commute across the services. I imagine that's probably a recurring theme that we've seen here with data management as well.
It's the same concept, just within our own organization, which is probably even more frustrating. There's a level of frustration when you can't communicate between services. It's a whole different ballgame, I guess, when you can't communicate within your own organization sometimes. We had a lot of the pieces there. We just weren't necessarily putting them together the right way in order to make them talk right. So that's a lot of what we're trying to do now. The original concept on this was, it was called digitization when I walked in. So my boss said to me, hey, I'm going to put you in charge of this one thing. It's called digitization. And that was really what was going to fall under plans and analysis was digitization, which, you know, the joke was that I was a one-ball juggler, right? I had one job to do, and that was it, and it shouldn't be that hard. The problem with digitization was that, and if I use my juggling analogy, is I threw the ball in the air and it just exploded into about 47 different things. So it wasn't as simple as everybody kind of made it out to be. There's a lot of frustration with the fact that digitization was given a lot of lip service, but there wasn't a lot of action behind it because there wasn't really a plan laid out for what we were trying to do. It was just, we need to do something, we're not really sure what it is. Everybody's really busy doing what they need to do, and we don't really have the time to devote to this right now, but it is important.
What does digitization actually mean? So when I kind of conceptualize it,
you know, yeah, we need to digitize something that's, hey, you take the hard copy and you basically encrypt it or type it into the computer program so it's digitized or on digits. But like, what does that actually mean?
That was probably another one of our frustrations around here, is if you asked around the formation, there's probably 17 definitions of what digitizing actually is.
I believe it.
I mean, in a very basic layman's terms, it's the difference between analog and digital, right? Like, so think about analog phone, digital phone. Think about, you know, if you really want to boil it down, it's going, an analog can be looked at as a paper product, and, you know, your digital format is like something you have on a computer, right? So that's probably the most basic way of looking at it. But to address further what you're talking about, you know, there's two aspects of digitizing things in the way we look at it. And it's, one is to be able to take those pieces of paper and scan them and be able to upload them into a digital format like a PDF where you can reference it. And then the other piece of that is having that queryable data that you can go into and you can look up, you know, somebody's last name, their social security number, their, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Whatever information that is, it's very easy and quick to find, something like you'd find in a database.
All right, so Stu, you mentioned the umbrella program for all information related to these activities. What's underneath the umbrella? What other programs are associated with SOFMIS, and what do they do?
So, I mean, there's a litany of information management systems that we have underneath the SOFMIS umbrella. Things that you would find common to any military unit, like ATARs and EMILPO, you know, those personnel databases that we constantly reference. But as far as efforts with what we're looking at, with the key elements that we have under SOFMIS that we're looking at right now, I'll address really three of them, I think. The first one's the Gideon SOF program that we put into place. That particular program is really about gathering performance data and then in a format that you can go and analyze that later. We gather performance data on soldiers from the time they come here for selection to the time they go through the training pipeline. The second piece is the Vantage program, which we just put together. It's a program built for aggregating data from Army, big Army programs, and then you can also add in like what we call P-11 programs, or programs that are peculiar to the special operations community. The third piece of this is the data analytics. We really haven't had a data analytics capability in the past, and we are in the process of building up our data analytics piece. So Gideon SOF, for example, will provide that platform that will give us the data and the information that we want to look at, but you have to have somebody that can analyze that data in an educated way so that you can provide that information to your commander so he can make data-informed decisions.
So we're using SOFMIS in these programs, Gideon SOF Vantage and our data analytics, to really gather that data and understand the person as we produce here at the Special Warfare Center, the special operations operator, the person. What kind of metrics are there, and how does it do that? What are we looking at holistically, performance-wise, for people as we gather those? And then who, throughout the SWIT command, is the person who helps us interpret that?
Okay, a lot to unpack on that one.
Okay.
So what are we gathering? It would depend on the course that we're looking at in particular. So if we're looking at a course like Special Forces Assessment Selection, which is probably one of the most common ones that people move to, when you're looking at that, you're looking at basic things like your PT test, the guy's ability to conduct a ruck, you know, and what kind of time does he do on the ruck. There's other, you know, all the other things like your, how does the guy do on an obstacle course? And then you have all the testing out there, like the psychology testing or the psychological testing, intelligence tests, all those things. So all these things are gathered and metrics are put against those things. And that's really, in accordance to how well that guy does at the course, will dictate whether or not he passes assessment selection. So then, right now, from a very basic standpoint, from a layman's standpoint, we've been taking that data, it's been put, you know, gathered and put into a folder in the past, and then that's reviewed at the end of the course for those that are left standing, and there'll be a chosen few that go to the board, but for the most part, you know, your guys that are left standing there will pass the course, and then you have your people who go to the board, that not so much, and then they get reviewed. That packet, that information is utilized to make a determination of whether or not they're going to be selected. When you get into the courses themselves, once they get selected, then they get chosen for the MOS, and then there's a series of different classes that they have to attend. Again, metrics are gathered on those, so really the three major pieces of data that we normally look at is your admin, your academic, and your performance. There we go. So your admin, your academic, and your performance pieces. One of the major problems we've had in the past is those particular pieces of data tend to be in different systems and tend to be sometimes compartmentalized or stovepipe, so you don't get a full picture sometimes on that soldier. So what we're trying to do is take those, put them into one common sight picture so you have a very good understanding of who that soldier is and whether or not they should be in the organization. You know, is this the person we're looking for to be a special operations operator? And you asked me the other day, which I think is a really important point, to maybe talk a little bit about selection versus the actual Q course itself. And I think in the bigger picture, what's important to understand, especially like, and this is really kind of looking at it from a business lens, is when you look at Special Forces Assessment Selection, or any of our selection courses for that matter, that's really when the organization has the opportunity to look at the candidate and figure out whether or not this is somebody that we should actually truly invest in. Because it costs a lot of money at the end of the day to invest in these soldiers. So when they go to selection, that's our opportunity. That's our look to really find out whether or not this is the person that we want to put this much money and time into. When they finally get selected, then they move on to their qualification course. When you put them into qualification, that at that point, the organization should be looking at how we manage our investment.
Because they've already been selected, right? So right. That way, it's now how do we train that person? Because we've already passed, we've already assessed them, we've already selected them, and now we want to continue investing in those people we've retained and get them to become the most trainable folks and most well-trained folks before we can send them out to the operational force. Is that right?
Correct. 100%, and that's exactly where we're trying to go with that. What we're building now with the Gideon Soft platform is it's allowing us the ability to gather that data more efficiently and then be able to analyze it. And it really, you can analyze it in two different ways, right? You can analyze it for the now, for when the soldiers are actually going through the course, to find out how they're tracking through and how well are you managing that investment, right? But in the bigger picture, when you look at analytics, it also allows you to look at trends,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So an organization can look at trending within the with how well or not well we are doing and areas that we need to get better at or more efficient with.
No, I love that. So why is SOFMIS important to the command here? As we look at our mission to produce our soft soldiers and the most well-trained our soft soldiers in the world, why is SOFMIS so important to the command? What does it do for the command?
Number one, like you already mentioned, probably the most important thing is that our job here, our mission here, is to produce Army Special Operations Forces soldiers. Some of the best in the world at what they do. So everybody here takes that job very seriously. So we need to provide systems that allow us to do that and do it well. The second part is by putting the systems in place, it allows the organization to see itself better. And when you can see yourself better, it gives us a level of introspection, I guess, like we all need at some point or another. And when you can see yourself better, it allows you to do things better and allows you to be more efficient at what you do. So that'd be number two. In the bigger, broader sense, and number three, we are like a Fortune 500 company in a lot of ways, right? We have our CEO upstairs. He's a two-star general. He runs this organization. He has his executive staff. And in a lot of ways, we need to think like a Fortune 500 company, right? And part of being a Fortune 500 company in this day and age is big data and how you manage your data. If you can do that better, then you tend to be more efficient. And when you're more efficient, it allows you to control your cost, improve your quality, and improve your outputs. If we can get to more of a business model in certain ways, there's no way we can ever do it completely because we are a government entity and a military entity. But if we can adopt some of those concepts from the business world and ultimately end up improving our costs, improving our quality, improving our outputs, it's only going to make our organization better and make our product better, which is, you know, soft soldiers.
So if we didn't do that, I imagine the CEO would have to go in front of the shareholders annually and show expenditures. And so if we've been able to become produce a more efficient product, you know, whether that's cost-saving measures, output of the same quality, but in a more expedient amount of time, and then, of course, other factors that go into that. But that's why the softness is incredibly important, so we can best understand ourselves. And again, produce a world-class product, which is the person, the soft operator, out to the operational force to get them working, to get them oriented and start integrating with their units and start working with partner forces across the globe. I like that a lot. Really, what does like efficiency mean as far as production? How can we be most efficient in the production of a person or a skill set as we get them to the end of the pipeline?
What we tend to do a lot when we work in the military is we tend to focus on our foxhole, so to speak, and we get a little myopic in the way we look at the way we see the world or the organization that we work in. So it tends sometimes to be difficult to look at things in a holistic fashion. One of the things I would say I had the luxury of being able to do as a 3-5 is to do just that, to look at this problem holistically as opposed to sitting there in my foxhole going, you know, this isn't right, but I can't really see what's going on around me. When I break out this from a holistic standpoint, it really starts with recruiting. When we start to recruit soldiers, how, you know, when we first reach out to them, it moves to assessment selection, it moves to training when they go through the Q course, and then it moves out into the operational force, and then ultimately it really becomes a retention discussion, right? How do you retain these guys you spent so much time and effort and money on? You have to start by looking holistically, and then you have to look at where you can gain efficiency in each of those areas. Like, how do we become more efficient at recruiting soldiers, right?
You mean to tell me it's not just about producing numbers and hitting mission for numbers we have to send people to? There's a little bit more science to that?
That is a model. I'm not going to say it's not. You can use quantitative approaches to things, and but you're going to get quantitative answers to those approaches, right? The reality is, if you look at the soft maxims, right, like soft can't be mass-produced, okay? And if it can't be mass-produced, that means that there has to be a level of quality associated with it, right? When you do a quantitative approach to recruiting, you are going to sacrifice quality when you do that. And the problem with that is when you do that, you bring people to the course that probably don't have a chance of making it through, right? So we want to give them the best chance of making it through, right? And how do you do that? You find the best quality you can in the big army, and you bring them to selection, and they have a higher propensity to make it through the course. So that's one area that you can find efficiency, right? Because if you bring 100 people to the course and only 10 of them really have the capability to make it through, that means you've spent money on 90 people that you knew weren't going to make it through the course. And that is an incredible waste of money and time and effort. And for what? What's your output? So that's one area where we could definitely be more efficient. There's areas within assessment and selection on how we run pieces of it that we could probably be a little more efficient and get more people through the course. Not to say we sacrifice standards, because we wouldn't do that. It's just sometimes you can change things in structure a little bit, and that will actually help. With the training pipeline itself, we actually have paired off with West Point in their systems engineering side, and we've started to model out the actual pipelines with computer programs, one in particular called ProModel, which is a pretty interesting model, or a pretty interesting program for modeling, where you can lay out the whole pipeline, and then you can find out where you are not being efficient overall.
What does that program look like? And then are we doing that across all three pipelines? Is that with Civil Affairs, SIOP, and Special Forces? Are we focusing on one right now? Where's kind of the starting point for that, and where have we progressed thus far?
So the starting point was the SFQC, the Special Forces Qualification Course. The intent is to do all three. We had to start with something, and that was actually put into place before I got into the seat. One of the other guys in my shop had been working with West Point, and the instructor up there at West Point was a Special Forces guy, so that's where we started first.
It's good connective tissue right there.
Right. So it was it's worked out really well. It's really interesting. It's also in a different vein. It's kind of a recruiting tool, right? Because it allows these guys to see what we do here at the Special Warfare Center and school. So that really can make a difference down the road for the posterity of our force. As far as how the model looks, it's really just about, I'm not a modeling expert. I'm definitely not a systems engineer. So like for me to really explain exactly what this is and getting the weeds on it would probably be hard. But the reality is you take the various courses that we have and you look for the inefficiencies as a guy moves through a program. And what a model allows you to do is build essentially a laboratory that you can make changes to your pipeline. For example, you might be familiar with some of these. You take SUTs and you get rid of that, you make a tactical skills, and then you end put it at the very end of the pipeline.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that affects, right? Second, third, fourth order effects when you do that. When you place these things into a model, it allows you to have a laboratory to make those changes and see what impacts it's going to have before you ever have to do it. So it can save you a lot of money and time and resourcing.
Yeah, it's a predictive analysis to see how it's going to actually affect the product. I think the partnership with West Point right now and the systems engineering department is huge. I don't know who else in the military is doing this right now. Are any of the other special operations service branches also looking at themselves in this way? And how do we differentiate ourselves from what they're doing? Or is it in line with what other services are also doing?
So the service that we've worked with the most has been the Marines, so MARSOC.
Okay.
They have been a tremendous partner so far in this endeavor. Interesting history on MARSOC, because they stood up in 06, right? So the Gideon Soft piece was, we actually started in the early 2000s, and MARSOC stood up in 06. And so MARSOC came to us when they first stood up, and they were looking for a program that they could actually track assessment selection and their training courses. We told them back then, Gideon Soft was called Whole Man. So they took it, went to the contractor, had it built out, and they call it Whole Marine. They've been using it since 2008.
And they're still using it now, right?
And they're still using it now.
Okay.
And it's they're very happy with it. It's been a great program for them. But the benefit for us is we've been able to work together on the program itself and how to make it better, sharing business practices. It's been a huge win. As far as other services, I've had the opportunity to speak with some folks from the Air Force. I met with Border Patrol not too long ago, which is interesting. They actually use Gideon Soft, which was a surprise to me. I didn't know that. I will also be moving out to, next week I'll be going out to see the SEALs. SEALs have used it in the past. I want to talk to them a little bit about how they've used it and, you know, what they're doing with it right now and see what the future holds for that.
So before we started working with Gideon Soft, what was the way to capture data, performance data, or really take a look at how we were doing things efficiency-wise and production-wise through, or I guess for the assessment selection course? Were we doing anything? What did we have as far as a continuity on each of the individuals as they went through, like when you went through the course and when I went through? What was going on then?
So part of that is, that's a good question. It's definitely a piece of consternation around here, I think, for a lot of people. The infamous red jacket is the way we're doing it. So the red jacket is basically your folder for you going through the course. And your data is added to that folder as you move through that course, right? Or you move through the pipeline. And when you finish with the pipeline, those documents folder was taken and it was filed and probably never to be seen again. There's a few problems with that, and this going back to your analog digital question. This is as analog as it gets, pretty much. Right? so it starts off.
You mentioned these things are probably sitting in a Connex somewhere.
No, I don't think they are. They are. That's okay. We're working on that as well, and that's probably a different discussion for a different day. But how do we digitize our documents from the past is something we're working on as well, but. That was pretty much the way we did it. It would all go into a file, and there's problems with that though, right? Because it would compartmentalize the information between the different courses in certain ways, so they didn't really have a true picture of the soldier as they moved through.
Stovepipes, right? Stovepipes from each part or each phase of the course for assessment selection to intro to SUT, or which is now TAC skills, to SEER. So very much stovepiped, and I imagine the systems didn't talk, or there was no continuity all the way through from start to finish. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay.
And then down the road, it gets filed, you know, it really doesn't see the light of day again. So that none of that data can be looked at for any reason. Whether you just want to go and reference something, you have to go pull the jacket and dig through connexes, right? Or if you want to do trend analysis something, you can't, because there's nothing to do trend analysis on. So that there was an answer to that to some degree with when General Sokolic was at Special Warfare Center. He stood up a program called STARS. That's right, it was the SWICS, Tracking and Administrative Record System. And really that was the first attempt to start moving us toward digitization. And it did it for its time, it did a very good job. It was a database program that allowed us to input the information into the system and upload documents against it. It's also the system we use for printing everybody's certificates for each of the classes they attend here. So there was a lot of utility in the program, and it did great things for its time, but it started to lose traction after the general left, and it didn't get a lot of maintenance over the years. So it's still kind of stuck in 2010.
Okay.
In a lot of ways. We still use it right now, but it is a legacy system that we'll probably divest of sometime in the near future.
So we've been running the Special Forces qualification course and assessments and selections for about 50 years now. And the pathways, or the pipelines as we like to call them, have fluctuated and changed a little bit throughout. But we've always still produced a world-class product. You look at the graybeards, the special operations folks who've come before us, all extremely good, extremely professional, and have always been top tier special operations members going out to the force. So I would say the quality hasn't really changed. In fact, we're continuing to get better, continuing to learn, continuing to adapt as we're asked to do things on behalf of the National Defense Strategy. We're taking a look at ourselves. As we're gathering data and now looking forward in the future, what does this do? What kind of decision-making opportunities does this provide commanders? What can they do with this?
Well, I mean, like I said, the first thing it does is it allows our command to see itself better, right? Secondly, it allows us to see the soldiers that are going through the various pipelines much better, which is all definitely a benefit. Ultimately, though, where we'd like to get to is that we can take what a soldier does here at Special Warfare Center and develop a form of report card for gaining commanders, which would all be based on the information gathered, the data gathered as a soldier moved through whatever their respective pipeline. When that report card, we haven't really nailed down exactly what will be in there. The Marines use a form of it right now, and it tends to be pretty well received. But the concept behind it would really be to provide a commander, a gaining commander, information on a soldier that would show where they're strong or where they need to work on a little bit, and then also give an idea of where they would fit within that new organization, that gaining organization. And I think that'd be a powerful tool for any commander and his sergeant major for placement within the organization and development of those soldiers.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way I kind of conceptualize that is, you know, in the past, when a guy graduates any of the Q courses, his gaining unit, you know, will receive his ORB or ERB, his record brief, maybe his last few NCOERs, which of course were probably a year and a half, 2 years removed, but he had an AER as he's going through the course. But you don't get a holistic picture of that individual's personality, performance, how they actually did compared to their peers going through the courses, their strengths or weaknesses, whether those are, you know, physical strengths or strengths under pressure or the environment they could work in. Hey, this person's possibly better working out in the jungle autonomously, you know, leading a small indigenous force. This person's more comfortable working at strategic levels in an embassy with State Department partners and interagency partners. And yet we're, of course, a multi-tool. We're soft operators. We're supposed to be good at them all. But this should give a better picture as to where where guys could fit in when they get to their gaining unit. I almost picture that battalion or group command sergeant major looking at talent management, can take that report card and say, hey, based off of the things we've seen in his performance over the Q course, this person might best fit on this ODA, this specialty team, or personality matched with this, you know, E8 team sergeant based off of their, you know, strengths and weaknesses or trends that they've seen. So I really see that as an opportunity to let them do some better matchmaking to create a good team moving forward, you know, send them out to do good work on behalf of our nation. Is that kind of accurate? Is that what we're talking about here?
That's spot on. That's what we're trying to get to, and we're not trying to do this in a vacuum either. It's not like, you know, Stu Gallagher and his crew of hoodlums up here have just come up with this great idea and we're gonna put it together whatever way we want. We're actively joint venture, for lack of a better term, I guess, with some students from MPS or Naval Postgraduate School. One of them is a MARSOC officer, the other one is a Special Forces officer, and they're putting the academic rigor behind looking at what actually needs to be in that report card. In addition to that, we have the command here to give their guidance, and then also your commanders out in the force that can weigh in on what they'd like to see in that report card so that we can help guide those soldiers to the right place and give them the development they need when they get into the force.
Oh, I love that. I wanted to ask you, so based off our conversation yesterday, really on kind of the Moneyball conversation that we had, can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, the Moneyball discussion here in reference to data analytics? And then talk to me a little bit about the Moneyball discussion here in reference to data analytics.
So, Moneyball discussion, yeah. That was actually one of the books on the CG's list. So, anybody who hasn't read it should probably go out and do so.
It's Oakland A's, fascinating, Billy Bean.
Yeah, fascinating book. Absolutely fascinating. Revolutionized the baseball industry. I'm not saying we're quite doing Moneyball here, but it's the concept is kind of similar. What I mentioned earlier is what I call the RSOF efficiency model, which starts at recruiting, and you go to assessment, selection, training, operations, and retaining. Right. So again, like I mentioned earlier, it's really a holistic approach for promoting cradle to grave efficiency for a soldier going in the RSOF life cycle, right? And the intent here is to attack the efficiency issue in these from different multiple angles and ultimately diffusing the effort from just one thing. For example, it's not just a recruiting problem, it's not just an assessment selection problem, it's not just a training problem. Every single area could be more efficient. So the idea behind what we're putting together right now is to make incremental gains in each of those areas, recruiting, assessment, selection, training, operations, and retention, which ultimately will add up in the aggregate, right? Which was what the Moneyball discussion was about, right? You can't replace that one player, but
Jason Giambi, but you can
build them in the aggregate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the concept we're coming at this with, is like we can fix things incrementally and then build it, make it better in the aggregate, which ultimately has less impact on that particular element of the organization, but it only goes up a few percentage points. But when you add those all together from all those different areas, you end up seeing gains in efficiency. One of those, for example, was what we mentioned earlier, was in the recruiting piece. We call it the targeting recruiting model. And my data analytics section is the one that we've been developing this briefing with and really digging into, you know, how do we move from quantitative recruiting to qualitative recruiting? We had another piece from retention to bookend the other end of it, I guess. When we looked at the retention piece, the first thing I noticed was we need to figure out how much money we're spending. How much money are we spending on soldiers that we send through here? Suffice to say, it's a lot of money. To train a special operations soldier with the amount of training they have to go through and the amount of time they're here is a significant amount of money. And that goes back to our discussion earlier, is like, who do you want to invest in and how are you going to manage that investment? The data analytics piece is another element of really looking at how do we become more efficient, how do we save money, and make a better product and improve our output. And that's really where we're trying to go with this.
Are there specific areas where we are actually saving money and creating a better product? Is there any like vignette examples that you can give?
I think it might be too early in the game to tell because we haven't really made major changes yet to the system. The GideonSoft piece, is, although it's been around for a while, it's starting to provide data now to us. Where I can say, I guess it's definitely saving people time. From the information I'm getting back from a line, the guys are saying it saves me an incredible amount of time because I don't have to input things multiple times, or I can find data a lot quicker than I used to because it's all in one repository as opposed to looking in 14 different places for it.
Okay.
So I guess those are some short vignettes on where we're saving. But I think time will tell as we get these systems more and more built out. I think it's going to start showing itself.
Nice. So again, still looking at very much the gathering data so we can look at ourselves. And then you had already mentioned informing those decision makers. You know, hey, these are options to be more cost efficient, to be more efficient overall, to continue to make a better or best quality product. But how do you like translate that? How does a commander who may not be completely savvy as far as data analysis or what these numbers mean or trends mean, you know, how does that get articulated to the commander so that they can make an informed decision? And is that you that does that, or is that your team?
That's a really good question. I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. Of course, my job as a PSYOP officer is to be relatively good at that. What they don't train you at the PSYOP course is how to take something that's incredibly complicated and boil it down into a very understandable format for anyone to be able to read, right? To break it down into layman's terms. I think I am relatively well versed in being able to do that, and I think I do a pretty good job with it. It is a challenge. I don't really have a formula for it or an easy way to answer it. The guys I work with are very gray matter. I mean, my data analytics guy has a PhD in neuroscience. He looks at things in a very scientific way. The way I've explained it to him, because he's also an Army officer, is like you have to find a way to be able to flip the switch between being a scientist and being an Army officer. Because if you can't, you're going to have a really hard time in the Army. And part of being an Army officer is being able to brief well. The part they don't teach you in the Army officer school is, again, how to take something incredibly complicated and then boil it down to a few pages or a few slides and then stick it in front of the boss and go, hey, sir, this is where we're at. So it takes a lot of time. It's a lot of push and pull, or, you know, meeting of the minds with my team. We'll sit down, we'll go through the material. I've been through enough briefings in my career, what I know, and I've sat in command as a commander, not given, albeit not at the CG level, but I've sat as a commander and I know what commanders look for, so I know it's important. And so I'll weigh in on, and I've briefed the CG enough, I guess, to know what he's normally looking for and how he wants to receive information. So that's what I use as my metric to make those briefings understandable. And even when we do that, it can be difficult because of just the nature of the material that you're looking at.
So you're telling me you have in your shop, your cell, again, as the plans and analysis director here in the G35 at the Special Warfare Center, you have a PhD Army officer that works, a PhD in data analytics that works with you or for you to make our Special Warfare Center the most optimized and most efficient production of world-class special operators. What is that like? And tell me about how fortunate are we to have, you know, a team like that?
We are fortunate, and yes, I am telling you that. We do have a PhD. He has a PhD in neurophysics or neuroscience, and he has a master's in data analytics.
So talk about investment of us wanting to understand ourselves, having somebody like that, somebody like you in these positions. That is a true investment in what we're trying to do to make ourselves better.
Well, and it's really, at the end of the day, it's probably a talent management discussion, right? So when you're looking at his position, he's a 71 Fox. There's only like 25 in the Army. There's not many people with his background. 71 Fox, research psychologist, that's it. And which is kind of funny, right? Neuroscience, research psychologist. But he falls under medical service corps. That job is a rarity. And so we got lucky. He was in a position where he's able to come over to us and work for us. I happen to have a lot of work in that area. I didn't exactly know what that looked like, but I knew I had a lot of work in that area because I am by no means a data analyst. Not in that form anyway.
Just to recap, you're a soft guy. You're a soft guy looking at a complex problem and trying to figure out or working to figure out how to approach it, bringing a good team together and tackling a beast of adventure like this to look at ourselves and be the best quality producing entity that we can be. Like that's really impressive.
No, it's kind of funny. We joke about it up in the shop. My PhD walked in the office one day and he's like, I was just thinking to myself, you know, if somebody ever proposed this idea in the civilian world, said, hey, we're going to do this massive, I don't want to say experiment, but we want you to build this entire management information system and build in the data analytics piece and all these different pieces. And then you look at it and just go, yeah, I'll take a shot at it. Like, because in the civilian world, the reality is they put probably millions of dollars against it and they go out and they recruit and they find the right people. Probably outsource. There's a lot of different things they would do. If we were like Google or Amazon or something like that, right, that's probably the way they do it. But this, like, gets posed, right? My boss says to me, hey, we're going to do this thing called digitization. Go figure it out. You know, there's really no left or right limit. There's really no guidance because he didn't really know what the guidance was.
Sure.
It wasn't a ding on him. It was just that's what it was. And just us being soft officers, that's what we do. We go, yeah, I'll take a shot. Why not?
Figure it out.
And you start running and trying to figure stuff out. And it's been an interesting journey. Don't get me wrong. This has been a fascinating job so far. I learn every day. I learn from my team. I learn from the people I interface with outside of our organization. It's absolutely a fascinating job. And it's the way the world is going. I mean, like, no matter what, no matter where I go or my guys go in the future for future positions, these are lessons and education that we'll be able to carry with us wherever we go.
So I see this also as a collaborative approach. So as a soft guy in the G35, building an extremely impressive team, but you're also collaborating with our folks out at NPS, the Naval Postgraduate School. And are they in the Defense Analysis Program, or are they Systems Engineering? Do you know what master's program they're in there?
I don't know specifically. I'm going to go out and meet with them pretty soon, and I'll probably have a better handle, but probably defense analysis. I don't think it's a systems engineering type thing.
So that means, I mean, that just tells me we're taking, I'm an NPS graduate myself, but we're taking folks when they go out to the graduate school programs in ILE, and giving them relevant topics to look at,
yes.
Or they're seeking relevant topics so they can give back to the force, and truly here at the Special Warfare Center, and our guys in the field doing true research and putting that research, that academic rigor behind it. And they have the time, they have, you know, the ability, the research partners and the academic faculty there to assist them through it. And then access, of course, to our database and similar ones. That collaborative approach and investment, I think, is truly impressive to what we're trying to accomplish.
That was our intent when we got going with this, was to, when we reached out to these organizations, or they reached out to us, for them, it's a tremendous opportunity to work on a real world problem or issue and hopefully provide solutions to that organization and improve things for that organization going forward, right? For us, it's an opportunity not only to do that, but it's also an opportunity for us to leverage expertise outside of our organization. And I don't want to say it's free, but it's something, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
They get something out of it, we get something out of it. But it's our ability to leverage expertise that we don't necessarily have resident in our current formations, or if we do, they're not available to be working on this because they're too busy working on whatever else they have to work on. So it really is a great opportunity for the both organizations, and where I think we're really both seeing a lot of benefit out of it in the right now and probably in the long run.
Yeah, that's huge. So as we're working through, so you've been working on this for about a year now, is that correct?
I have.
Yeah, so about a year. You know, what are those milestones where we'll be able to stop, take a pause, and give a decision brief or an overview brief to Major General Roberson, the SWCC commander, so he can understand, really digest the information you're giving him, and then make a decision on it? You know, what kind of milestones do those look like in the future, as you mentioned, providing commanders the ability to make decisions?
Yeah, the first milestone was whether or not he wanted to move forward with this when I first pitched the brief. And that was a thumbs up. Yes, we want to move forward. So that launched us. That was last fall that we briefed that one. So we've been moving forward ever since on that one. It took some time to get some funding together and get everybody mustered to start moving in the right direction. I believe the next decision point or reflection point or whatever you want to call it will be when we complete all of the modules for the SFQC, the Special Forces Qualification course.
Will that be after this next class that's currently in session?
No, I'm planning to have this done by the end of September. We have two more modules to build, and then the entire Special Forces pipeline will be done. And then at that point, my intention is to take a tactical pause on it to look at it as a system so we can review and see how it all works together. And then we're going to move forward again, and we'll start focusing on psychological operations pipeline and the civil affairs pipelines. There's really not a decision point. I don't at that when we finish the SFQC per se. It's just that's a time for the boss to really see, all right, this is what we built so far, sir. You know, what do you think? How does it work? The real decision point, I think, down the road is going to be when we finish the SIOP pipeline and we finish the civil affairs pipeline. Do we want to stop at the pipelines, or do we want to continue on and start looking at advanced skills? Do we want to build modules for advanced skills? Do we want to gather metrics on advanced skills like, you know, free fall, dive school? Is that an area we want to go? Because that will require more investment, it will require more resources, it will require more time.
Sure.
And as we look into the future right now with our crystal ball, funding is not what it was a couple of years ago. And we, you know, as things start to get a little tighter, is that money going to be available to expand? And I don't have the answer for that, but that's going to be a decision for him to make on how far do we want to run with this thing, or can we run with it. But at the very least, we will have the pipelines built, and it will really provide a tremendous amount of benefit to our organization going forward.
So what is it we're doing with 7th Special Forces Group? What's the project we're working on with them? And help me conceptualize or best understand what we're doing there and our activities with them.
So we haven't started with them yet. So all I've done thus far is I met with them, and we talked about providing a feedback loop to the school. And really, they looked at it more as a view of, we'd like to have this best ODA competition, right? We'd like to gather information on our ODAs and find out how good or not good they are, right? Like, what do we need to work on? How do we improve them as an ODA? So we talked about this. I went down there and we talked about it. And we were interested in it because we would like that feedback. And why would we like that feedback up here? Because by having a feedback loop from the operational force, which is something we lack right now, that information will allow us to, it will better inform how we recruit, how we assess and select, and how we train. And we right now, we don't really have that other than discussions and forums and different things, but there's really no metrics against it or no mechanism against it that really shows how we do that. So that's where we're planning to go with that. If that pilot, because we really consider it a pilot, if that works well, going back to your decision point question, that will be another decision point for the boss. Is this something that you want to do with the operational force? And it'll also be a discussion with First Special Forces Command as well, right? Is this something you guys want to do? Is this information valuable enough for you to build out these modules, populate these modules with the data as you move through? And then that information feeds back to the Center of Excellence for us to review and figure out how we can do things better.
I wanted to go back to one of the other questions that we had talked about. So how was SOFMIS, how was that received across the command? You know, how has that journey started? And then how have you gathered momentum moving forward to implementing SOFMIS throughout this past year?
As you can imagine, there is a lot of reticence at first, especially in a lot of cases with your civilians that have been here for quite some time. They've seen things come and go. They've seen a lot of green suiters come and go. We are, you know, the green suiters are pretty much like summer help around here, right? We're in here for a couple of years and we leave. The civilians see a lot of what happens and what doesn't happen. So they've
outlived a lot of initiatives as well.
Yes.
You know, they've seen a lot of things that have happened or concepts that have been implemented previously. And then for some reason, funding or personnel or drive or operational changes, you know, things happen. And then sometimes initiatives go away. And then, the concept is resurrected or is a reoccurring thing. It's like, yeah, we're going to do this. And it's maybe not the most profound thing. It has happened before. And a lot of times those civilians will have continuity because they've seen what works or what hasn't worked.
Right. And there's no doubt. The civilians are the continuity in this organization.
100%.
Without them, SWCC would cease to exist. The bottom line, we couldn't run this without civilians. But there was reticence on their part, but there's also reticence on the green suiter part, right? It's like, well, we've seen these kind of things come and go. So, and what it comes down to at the end of the day is it's we are asking people to change, right? And nobody likes change. I don't care what it is. Nobody likes change, and nobody likes moving to a new system.
Change is scary.
Yeah,
it is. Change is
really
a scary thing.
And so I can't blame them. I mean, I'm the same way, right? Like, we're all the same way. We don't like change. Like, you find a beer you like, and you tend to drink that beer, right? You find a route that you like to drive to work, and you tend to take that route to work. So it's understandable. You know, when I was studying for my organizational management degree, I can't tell you how many courses were about change and change management, because trying to institute change in an organization is tremendously difficult because there's usually a lot of pushback. However, I think a lot of people have warmed up to it. I was very aware of that walking into this and realizing that there were going to be some significant changes that needed to take place, and that I was going to have to really, I refer to it a lot as a joke, but my travel and road show, where I'd spend a lot of time going around the command and talking to people. So I would go down the line, I'd be out of a call, speaking with the different committees out there, different folks out there, and just finding out what is going on out there and meeting the people that are out there and pressing the flesh and just figuring out what the problem is.
Yeah, that's ground truth, right?
Yeah, what are we doing well? What are we not doing well? What do you guys want to see in the future? And just figuring out really a lot of it, like I told you, I think in the beginning was the first thing I had to do was really figure out what the problem was. I was told, you know, quite a few years ago that you really need to spend a lot of time in mission analysis. You really need to spend time understanding what the problem is, because if you don't, what you'll end up doing is solving the wrong problem perfectly. And if you do that, you end up causing more problems than you solve. So I took about 4 months to figure out what the problem even was before I even wrote a problem statement on it.
What is the problem statement on this, by the way?
The problem statement. Do you want the official problem statement?
Talk me through the problem statement, just for our listeners, for some context.
All right, the problem statement. I will read it to you because I don't have it memorized, but I will read it. How does SWCC develop a management information system, both short-term and long-term, accessible to all stakeholders with minimal impact on the force, that is accurate, enduring, and historical, while providing up-to-date reporting to the command for the purposes of student management, student accountability, force production for special forces, civil affairs, and psychological operations, and forecasting? That is the official problem statement.
Thanks for reading it. I appreciate it.
I'm glad. I'm sure I just bored everybody out there. I do want to return, though, back to, like, how has it been received? Because I do believe that people are warming up to it. And one of the ways, why are they warming up to it? At the end of the day, whatever we do out of the 3-5 shop or as an organization, we really need to provide value. This is really a value proposition across the board, right? So if I come in and say, hey, I'm going to put this new system into place, Bobby, get ready, and I'm going to just, it's going to take a lot more of your time and effort, and you're just going to be frustrated all the time, you probably look at me like I was crazy.
And I may not understand it at first either.
And you might not care. But if I tell you, hey, this could save you a lot of time, it's going to be more organized, and you're going to be able to communicate better with people, you'd probably be listening, well, wait a second, I can go home early now and stay here until 7 o'clock at night, and I don't have to be frustrated. I don't have to make 14 phone calls to make sure the information is where it's supposed to be with the right person. That's really what it came down to, was providing a value proposition to the folks that are going to be dealing with this, the stakeholders that are going to be working with it. That's how you really overcome the reticence in a lot of ways. But then you got to make good on it. That's the other.
Show me.
This is not a political game in that regard. You can't be the politician out there going, "Hey, we're gonna do all these great, wonderful things," and then, oh yeah, you know, I was just running for office back then. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. Like, you actually have to make good on what you're saying you're gonna do, and I think so far we've done that. Like anything in the military, it takes a little longer than you want it to, but we have made tremendous headway in the past 6 months. And I think if you went out and interviewed people across the formation, just at random, the people that are working with us, they would tell you that they're seeing the benefit out of it. There's still challenges, and I'm not going to say that there aren't, and there's things that we're working on every day to make it better, but we have made a lot of headway so far.
What are some of those benefits? So if I'm looking at, say the Special Warfare Center and School qualification course cadre members, are they going to see a benefit at the cadre level? Or are they what kind of benefits are people going to see as we go continue to gather information and make decisions and looking at ourselves?
I think one of the areas you see benefit down the road, maybe not quite right now because we haven't divested of some of the other systems, but you won't have to input data as much.
Okay.
Right now there's a lot of double input, triple input, and that takes time to do. The other, I think a big one is going to be that there's going to be one site picture on this, right? There's one repository for information. There's going to be one authoritative data source that allows you to go to one place. And I see the same thing you're seeing, whether I'm sitting out at McCall or I'm sitting out at Yuma or I'm sitting, you know, here at Bragg. It's the same site picture for everybody. So you're not looking at something different, or you don't have a report, an older report, and I have a newer report, and the stuff doesn't mesh. Those are two of the big ones I see up front.
So what does that look like? What does the future hold for Sophomus? What comes next?
What comes next? So right now, I mean, we have a tremendous amount of support from the SWCC leadership, from General Roberson and his senior staff on down. And that's been incredibly helpful. The key to really making this all work in the future is going to be sustainability. And sustainability is really contingent upon continuing to provide that value and maintaining the momentum that we have. Another way of looking at it, in my mind, is we really need to find a way to embed Sophomus into the DNA of SWCC, right? How do we inculcate this into our organization and continue to move forward and make strides? The transition that we have of green suitors around here, that's always a challenge. We just went through it. You were part of the transition up here, right? And that is always a challenge. We're not getting rid of that anytime soon. But that's really where we need to get better with talent management, and we need to be a lot more thoughtful and strategic about where we place people in certain positions.
I think that's also part of the culture, right? So anytime there's an opportunity or a new initiative, it almost takes, not a generation, but it almost takes, you know, two or three iterations of command teams or personnel with that turnover until it kind of is built into the culture, or like you just mentioned, the DNA of it, so that when somebody comes in, say 4 or 5 years from now, into the Special Warfare Center and School as a cadre or a staff member, it's already happening. It's the norm. It's built in. It is part of that DNA. And it's just, yeah, we've been doing this, seems like forever. So now we're able to make decisions off of it. It's normal. And we're seeing the value and the benefit of it because it's not new anymore.
Right.
It's continuing to allow us to continue to get better and look at ourselves. So I think that's kind of what you're hitting on right there too, as part of that DNA, is it just takes a little time, right?
That's what my boss calls irreversible momentum. We can build this up to a point where it has irreversible momentum. It will be built into the DNA of the organization, and that's what's really going to make a huge difference. The last piece of that, I think, is really it's important for us to continue to be forward leading and really think differently about things, which is, talk about being built in our DNA. I mean, that's the way you're supposed to be as a soft guy, right? You're supposed to have that ability to think differently, to approach complex problems, right?
Operational design is all about that. How do we look at complex problems, not linearly, but from, you know, a multifaceted way? You know, we need to continue to test the limits, continue to reach out to industry and organizations outside of SWCC, because we don't have the lock on knowledge and intelligence. There's a lot of other folks out there doing a lot of great things. We just need to continue to reach out to them and maintain those linkages and relationships. And it will allow us to continue to move forward and look at things that are complicated or complex, which is what we pride ourselves on. It's one thing to be that way as a person. It's different to be that way as an institution. And I really think as an institution, we do a pretty good job of it, but we can always do a little better.
Stu, how would I relate this to something that's going on in the civilian sector or with industry, as far as GideonSoft or any of the other SoftMIS programs? You know, who else is doing this, and how are we relating what we're doing and producing a special operations person to what industry might be producing as a product?
I mean, where we are incredibly different probably than the civilian world is our product is people. Not to say that there's not other organizations that do something similar, but our product is people. It's special operations, forces, personnel, right? And so there's certain things we can adopt from industry as far as how you build a product and how do you do that efficiently, right? And a lot of the bigger organizations are doing that, right? They're, like I said earlier, the Fortune 500 companies, they're all into big data. They're all into analyzing big data, you know, collecting it and analyzing it, right? It happens every day you pick up your phone, and it's not going to stop. So your companies like Amazon and Google and, you know, the laundry list goes on, they're all doing this already. So again, you know, relating ourselves to a Fortune 500 company, we need to get on board. There's a lot of value in gathering that data and analyzing that data and becoming more efficient as an organization. And we have the ability to do it. I'm trying to think if there's I'm looking for a parallel in my mind of an organization that would that does the same type of thing that we do that I could draw across.
What about in like professional sports or athletics, where they producing an athlete whose performance is measured in statistics, whether that's sacks, completions in football, or as we went back to Moneyball. You know, that performance is based off right. of, you know, batting average, RBIs, home runs, on-base percentage, things of that nature.
So there are companies doing that, and obviously that they have similar challenges in some ways and definitely different challenges in others. When you're looking at, like, college athletes, for example, it's hard to compare a college athlete to a professional military person. Your challenges are different. But when you're looking at gathering metrics and data on a person, that doesn't really change much, right? How fast does the guy run? How well does he throw? How accurate is it? Those things, you can measure those. Anything that's measurable. What is difficult in this whole field that we've found is it's not the tangibles, it's the intangibles. And what makes a really good soft operator at the end of the day is really the intangibles. I can measure all day long how fast you can run, how fast you can ruck, how quickly you did the obstacle course. Those aren't hard to do. The hard part is, do you have the heart? Do you have the perseverance to, like, not stop when things get difficult? Do you have the interpersonal skills required, you know, to be able to speak to a ambassador in a foreign country? I mean, do you have those skills? Or can we build them? You know? And again, these are very difficult things to figure out in a 2 to 3 week selection process, right? Does this guy have everything that I want, or this girl have everything that I want in order to put this incredible investment in them and then turn them loose into some of the most challenging missions in the world, right? And that really is our challenge. Like, I don't know if the athletes, they have to worry about the intangible stuff a little bit too, because if a guy gets in trouble or whatever because he does something dumb, and he can't play now, and that can affect the school, or it can affect the football team, or, you know, the professional team or whatever. There is an issue with that. We have a bigger problem in that regard, because a tactical blunder can turn into a strategic problem. And so we are kind of held to a different standard when it comes to assessment selection, and when it comes to training of those personnel, and then when it comes to actually sending them out on mission. We do borrow from those. We have the company that is actually helping us with the Gideon Soft builds. They actually work in those areas. They actually work with professional and college sports teams, gathering those types of metrics and helping them to see themselves. We are associated in that regard, but it is a little different challenge that we are looking at with what we are doing here.
When I get talked to, or when I get asked from people who are getting ready, preparing themselves to attend Special Forces Assessment Selection, you know, there's no best way to prepare. I always tell them, one, make sure you're in incredible shape, you know, you're ready, show up in shape, you know, prepared for any challenge of carrying, walking, moving heavy things from point A to point B over long distances. The other part is I tell them, when and if you get put in a leadership role, so when in charge, be in charge, and then when not in charge, be a really good team player. Be prepared to encourage, cheerlead, and motivate, you know, that team carrying very heavy things, moving or solving the problem, you know, whatever situation they might be presented with. And even though they're not the person in charge to, or maybe the decision maker, but they need to be the supporter of that leadership and help the whole team get across. And so those are kind of the things I like to tell guys when they prepare for assessment selection. But you're right, you look at, of course, there's you know, the standards of physical run times, PT tests, time standards for certain events such as land navigation. But the things you can't measure, or a little bit more difficult to measure, those intangibles of when that person's presented with the challenge they have to overcome, how do they internally prioritize what they're going to do next? How do they communicate that to their team? And then how do they prepare to move to go tackle that objective? I think that's really kind of a good way to look at it. And you have a good correlation with professional athletes in the sense that how do they handle pressure? Well, it's tough to actually to measure that without you know, looking at some qualitative, taking a qualitative approach looking at that person. And that's what we're doing at the assessment selection courses here.
Right. I mean, assessment selection, like, if I had to give anybody any advice, like, if it was just one piece of advice, it'd be like, just don't quit. That's what it comes down to. You may not be the best out there, but if you just don't quit. Just make up your mind. No matter how bad this gets, I'm not quitting. And if you're still left standing at the end, you have a high chance of making it through the course. If you aren't, then you know what happened. But the other, I mean, what we found doing data analytics, if you want to look at the Special Forces selection in particular, and you said, you know, get in shape, right? Being really good shape, which is totally true. Be in the best shape you physically can. But if you, the most important things that show, you have to be able to ruck and you have to be able to run. I mean, we're talking about just tangible things that you can see. You got to be able to ruck and you got to be able to run. And if you don't have above a 240 PT score, you probably shouldn't even apply.
Tell me about how you guys look at individuals that have a 240 and below. How does that correlate to performance at Special Forces Assessment Selection?
It doesn't. I mean, I joke about it, but like when you have a 240 below, what I believe it comes down to at the end of the day is you don't have the endurance to make it to the end. You will not have enough in the tank to get to the end. So you might make it through the very beginning of the course because, you know, you get through the PT test, but as you continue to progress and your body starts to hurt more and you know, you're more and more tired and you're getting less sleep,
you know, pressure's starting to mount more.
And the bottom line is your body's going to be degraded. And if you're not in top physical shape going into it, you're not going to physically be able to make it through. You're just not going to get through.
What's the pass percentage for a person who has a 240 or below on the PT test if they have the opportunity to attend SFAS?
According to our numbers, about 1%.
Wow.
Not highly recommended to try to come here if you have a 240. When you start getting above like a 270, for example, it's probably negligible between a 270 and 300, right? But it really shows it really shows at that level, at the lower levels. So,
yeah, and again, that's a barrier to entry for just being invited to come to the qualification course.
Yeah, we're relooking at, you know, I mean, this isn't, of course, I don't want this whole discussion to be about how we recruit and how we assess and select, but that is one of the things we're looking at in the bigger picture. And it's because it's important. The reality is how we recruit and who we assess and select is incredibly important to the posterity of our organizations, our organization in general. And it's important that you pick the right people, because those are the people you're going to invest in, those are the people you're going to train, and those are the people who are going to go out and do the missions in the future. And they're not easy missions, as we all know, coming off Afghanistan and Iraq.
All right, Stu, anything else that you wanted to add to the discussion or anything that we missed?
Obviously, we're about ready to close here, so I will I'll try to make my comments brief. You know, there's always going to be growing pains associated with any change the institute and organization. And, you know, for those out there across formation here at SWCC that are kind of part of this whole change, you know, I just ask for people's patience and support, because I know this is a little different animal than we've dealt with in a while, and it's you're not always seeing the benefit associated therewith. You know, more importantly, I ask for everybody's input. I don't know it all, you know, as much as I'd like to sometimes. You know, what are we doing well? What can we do better? You know, I have some really smart people on my team. I really do. But they, you know, we don't proclaim to have the market locked up on knowledge and intelligence. So your thoughts and suggestions are welcome, and please bring them to us. And ultimately, it's going to make the organization better, and all boats will rise. So I appreciate, you know, being on the show today, and hopefully this helps inform people a little better as to what SOFMIS is and isn't. And you know, we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, Stu, I can't thank you enough for your time in discussing the SOFMIS initiative with us today. I know I and our listeners definitely have a more informed view of the task that lays immediately ahead of us. Really appreciate your time today. Fascinating discussion. Look forward to more in here in the coming future. And then again, finding out how we continue to look at ourselves to continue to get better and producing a world-class special operations soldier. So, hey, thanks again for listening as we discuss SOFMIS today, one of our Special Warfare Center and School's newest and most arguably most important initiatives. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next time. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.